meeting. Welcome to all members of the committee. The DG and official from the Department of Public Enterprises, members of the media who are the officials attached to our committee, and all our guests. I'd like to extend a special word of welcome to Dr. Mfika and Mr. Mashini, who will be doing the presentation. I'm not going to allow time for the normal introductions that we do. We are just to save time. This is the meeting that we've all been waiting for. A report that was undertaken by the Presidential Review Committee. Members of the committee will remember that when this committee started its work, we had a meeting with them. And today I think we're all very happy that we're finally getting this report that we've all been waiting for with great excitement. Firstly, I think I should congratulate the Presidential Review Committee on the hard work that they've undertaken. I know it wasn't an easy task, but I would really like to congratulate you on the work that you've done. We now have a report before us, which I hope will help not just this committee but our country in finding a way that will address some of the challenges that we are faced with as a country. I'll invite Mr. Mashini, who I think with Dr. Mfika will do, as I said, will do the presentation. The presentation will take about 45 minutes, and thereafter members will have the opportunity to discuss the report, raise points for clarity, comments that you would like to make. I don't know if you're ready. Are you ready? By the way, this is actually the first report or presentation of this report by the committee. My first report was presented to the cabinet. So this is the first parliamentary interaction on this report. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation, and over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson, DG, honorable members, distinguished guests, members of the media, and all protocol observers. Indeed, it is an honor and a privilege that we have come before you to share the report that was commissioned by our state president on the state-owned entities. If we recall that this report was commissioned by our Honorable President on the 10th of May in 2010. And it comprised of 12 members originally, but we ended up with 10 members. And it was audited in August, and it was completed on record time by the end of May. And then it was presented to the president. Subsequent to that, it had to then follow the due process that the president applied himself to it. And then it was then presented to the extended joint parliamentary committee and last year. And after that, parliament also applied the cabinet took time to apply themselves to the report, and it was until, I think, last month when finally the minister was then authorized to release the report. And as you may recall, those that managed to attend some of the sessions that we held with the parliamentary, the portfolio committee, the members of the PRC were as listed here, and their specific names. And indeed, before I proceed, one should actually acknowledge what the chairperson has been already indicated. For us as the PRC members, we felt very much encouraged, supported by the portfolio committee. We felt this is actually our collective baby, although we take the responsibility in the sense that we found guidance from your house, we found some robust engagement, and we were pointed to the venue platforms as far as the state entities are concerned. And the various issues that were very critical were also pointed out when we came to see the portfolio committee about the brief that we've received. And so throughout that particular journey, we did hear your voices and your counsel, and we did our best as a committee to ensure that we don't let you down, but also we serve our country to the best of our ability. As we will recall, the Presidential Review Committee was given 21 terms of reference. I will not go through each one of them, but I think they entailed four areas which dealt with the development and transformation, ownership and governance, the viability of the state-owned entities, and the issue of the operational effectiveness. And we then also created the work stream that was a research and development unit. And Dr. Mfela, who's here with me, is the one who headed that particular unit that made sure and kept us in line to ensure that we followed the best practices and principles of a scientific approach to the exercise that we were doing and the comprehensive work and research that was then undertaken. But one needs just to punchline that there are certain things that we covered in the scope and there are certain things that were not in the scope. And we see here that certainly that even time and the resources, the scope of the review focused mainly on the macro review of the entity. It was not a micro. Although when we did what we call case studies, we did take samples of certain And the focus was actually on all AOVs. Again, we always find there's a misunderstanding on the terminology. We talk entities and we talk enterprises. In this case, that there are commercial and non-commercial. And you've got agencies, you've got Chapter 9 institutions, and so on, that are part of the entities. So they're not necessarily all of them enterprises who are in pursuit of commercial activity as such. And the other thing of the scope was that it entails all three spheres of government, from the municipality level to the provincial, as well as national. And the position that the committee earlier on took was that it was not completely a clean case. There had been a number of reviews that had been undertaken, either by different government departments or different entities. For example, I mean, we were strongly informed by reports and that were prepared by the Treasury, the Department of Public Enterprises, and the Department of Public Service, and the other studies also that were commissioned on remuneration. Remember the Barbara Mafikela report. So there's numerous things. We said we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We will draw as much as possible from the existing reports and documents and everything. And then where we then found gaps, we then commissioned. Either we would do a primary research, and in that we utilize what you call some of our national institutions, even KPMG, the PwCs of this world. And also we use what one say proudly, our own state-owned entity, which is the HFRC, to enable us to undertake the task. And in some respect, then we then commissioned individual position and discussion papers. Further, we also took the position that we need to be benchmark. And sometimes we have a tendency to say it has to come from overseas to be good. We were proudly South African in that we dug deep into our own history and about the role and the state-owned entities. And we found in our report, you'll see that we do give a very detailed historicization of the SOEs. We found that from Paul Kruger right up until today, the state-owned entities have been with us as a country, and they've been part of the fabric of our economy, and they've continuously been adapted by the various administration to suit the challenges of the day. And, you know, we followed those best practices. But also we looked internationally. We found that there's a plethora of reports, studies. We were not the only country looking into this question. The EU was dealing with the SOEs. We found that the UN is looking at these issues. We found going into the continental India and those regions, the SOEs were very much central. We looked in South America, and we did a comprehensive benchmark process. And then we said then we will leverage that which existed while we also fit ways to coming up with our original thoughts. You know, it's the old concept of what we call Mbakanga music, which came from the concoction drawn from jazz and drawn from our traditional music knowledge. So we believe that we as a country, we actually have a lot of our own experience, knowledge, that can play a role in advancing the challenges that was before us. But at the same time, as the Nelson Mandela once wrote, that we will borrow from the East and we'll borrow from the West. And that's what this report represents. It's the best attempt we could, under the circumstances, given the resources, for us to say what we'll put on the table. Now, this is just a detailed review activity that we undertaken, which I've already kindly indicated. There was a literature review. We conducted extensive seminars with focus groups for the country. And we have primary research information, which is a various census. We do surveys, and we also engage individual subject matter experts on the issues. We did case studies where we were looking at specific scenarios and for application. So it is not an academic basic research for this document. It needed to be a living, applied, report. The international engagement and focus group and the special research. And as I said earlier on, I mean, we're fortunate to have a team of well-accomplished academics, intellectuals, and specialists in research, in that they guided us in how then do we conduct the sample. And it was a scientifically determined sample that we used, and it was broken, as we've indicated here, service in the delivery, commercial regulators, and so on. So that is those who want to know the scientificity of this particular report and whether its findings and recommendations are worth the paper it is written on. We also delve into the area that linked to the mandate was, because our mandate was that we needed to review and provide a blueprint for a way forward with the SOE. But it was driven by that our brief was that it must actually update to the developmental state, which is the policy of the governing party. We then said we needed to unpack what this developmental state is all about. And interestingly, when we started scanning around the world, we found there was comprehensive work that had been done. Best experiences that have been done, number of countries that have undertaken. But we then pulled out and say, what our findings is that there were at least eight key areas for those that were involved in development of state in one form or another. It was that the emphasis was that first it requires that there must be a national shared developmental vision. Secondly, it was that the skills and innovation is central in driving those developmental states. And thirdly is that there was partnership, and partnership with the private sector, partnership with organized labor, and partnership with the organized civil groups in that society. And then the fourth thing that was central is that the enabling backbone of all developmental states was that there was some form of infrastructure development and investment. The fifth was the economic growth, fundamental, that you cannot improve or advance or get anywhere as a nation unless you go to grow and increase the size of that particular cake that you want to share. So economic development, economic growth was part of the policies. And the sixth thing was improvement of service delivery. Ultimately, the purpose for which the developmental state is set up is to deliver services, basic services, specialized services, or any other form of services. And the seventh thing was the improvement of quality of life from environment to health and of that society. And lastly was the strengthening of the democratic institution. Now, different countries had different emphases, but in the smokers board, that's what we picked up, and as far as the developmental state. And this was a modeling that then, from a change model, this indicates that there are four elements: the vision, the enabling legal framework, the performance and evaluation of the SOEs, and the competence and capacity. And the last block, you then see what kind of outcomes you'll find. If you make one example, if you don't have a vision, but you have the other three elements, then you can end up with what you call a fast start, but no direction. It can't be changed for the sake of change. I mean, the second one indicates if you don't have an enabling legal framework, you'll have poor governance, ownership, oversight, and a schizophrenic environment of some sort. So that is the change model, which I think the honorable members will actually look at their hand. But ultimately, that what we believe is that you need all the elements in place. And this links up with actually the report itself and the recommendations. Now, with respect to the report and the recommendations, the simplest way to actually have a sense of what exactly the report entails, we constructed a notion of saying, if you were to jump in a lift with our client, which at that time was the state president, and he asked, what is the report achieved? And it's going to be on the lift for five floors, and you must be finished by the time you get out of the lift. What would you say? And this is what we said. First and foremost, that there are challenges and the issues with respect to the strategy of the SOEs. Do we have an overarching strategic framework? That now becomes the cue and the guide for everybody, or everyone just does their own thing. So that's where the recommendations have zeroed in. Secondly, the enabling environment. The issues and the challenges and recommendations that are addressed, that we need an enabling environment, which is your governance and the legal framework. You'll see every time you read the papers, a lot of issues revolve around this area. So that's how we say we can address what recommendations we're making. The third and most important is the performance. Are they delivering the services and are they performing accordingly? And especially if we're now talking about value for money. If they are commercial, are they actually returning and making their return on investment? Are they delivering the services? Are they actually doing the transformation expected of them? And lastly, was that unless there is a capacity as far as the state is concerned, then you still have a problem. So the state capability to manage and run the SOEs was then part of the issue. The last point was then, if then there's a recommendation, those four recommendations, how do you implement it? So at the end of the report, you will see there is a section that is dedicated to say this is a recommendation to implement. May I take this opportunity through your chair to point out that throughout the deliberations and the outlook of the PRC, we were not about prescribing. What we were about more than anything was that we've actually moved in an area that has not been dealt with in this comprehensive manner. So we need to inform this course. The decision makers are our principals. It is Parliament. And it is the executive officers, whether it is at the level of the minister and DGs and the CEOs and the chairs of the board. But we felt that this should then draw as much as possible to enable decision makers to make final decisions. However, we did not skirt around the issues because our principal at that time was very clear to say that there should be no secretaries. Bring me a report that will enable us to make the decisions. And that now informs those recommendations. And as they break down, firstly, is the issue of the overarching strategy. What we are recommending is that, one, the government should develop an overarching long-term strategy for the SOEs. And this strategy must be aligned to the development of state that South Africa aspires to become. And what we say here, it then needs to be actually articulated into a white paper. And that the recommended strategy be periodically reviewed and evaluated at least every 5 years to ensure long-term alignment with the objectives and circumstances of South Africa's development of state. Mainly this is where the parliamentary portfolio committee and parliament comes in to say, you are sitting with mandates that some of them are obsolete. Some were drawn in the 1920s, 1940s. Are they still relevant? We found that the best practice, countries like New Zealand and so on, they run what you call periodically, that SOEs, they do come to Parliament and they review the mandate and then they review the program, and that then is the basis and substantiation. Why are they then funded or resolved in a particular way? We also then, on the enabling environment, we're saying the government should enact a single overarching law or any state-owned act. The reason here is that at the moment we are using PFMA, we're using Companies Act, there's a whole plethora of legislation And none of them actually were compromised for this environment. You know, countries like Namibia have already advanced in looking in this situation to have a SOE Act, because SOE are not homogeneous with private companies. They may share certain aspects, but here we needed some form of legislation which will then allow and assist the governance of the SOEs. We also are recommending that the government should have this, the law, it should be mandatory. And with that, there should also be an interministerial committee that will then oversee the process of this act and the recommendations. We also recommended that there should be a central remuneration authority that will look into the remuneration, because we found that the remuneration system is fragmented. And so that's part of the recommendation. And this will also help us to deal with the issues of ownership, because there's different parts of ownership that are required. So those are just the details that we first needed to be addressed, the establishment and the disestablishment. That's why we've ended up, in terms of our findings, we ended up with about 715 state-owned entities. And we can tell you now that we actually didn't reach the bottom of them. There are still others that we did not pick up. That's where proliferation needs to be dealt with. And we found that we don't have sufficient legislative mechanisms to enable the process of the establishment and de-establishment. And we also said the government should enact a single law that will assist to establish two central executive authorities where you pool your commercial entities, the commercial entities that provide services, and then you pool the DFI under each executive authority. And then the non-commercial one, we retain them under the nine function ministries. But we have a whole list of things that we also say it does not mean you should still retain all of them. Some of them, their functions could be returned back to the departments. And the alignment with the Municipal Financial Management Act was also one of the things that we felt needed to be addressed. We also dealt with the issues that relate to the appointment in terms of the board, and we also make recommendations in terms of the appointment of the CEO. Again, here, I think there's an element of subjectivity. I don't think it's where one can say there is a single proven scientific solution that, you know, you jump and stand over consultants and say this is the right and the correct way to go. What we did was that the best practice and what was reasonable is that we needed to have some standardization, and that's what then we recommend, that you have the board and you have the executive authority, and we have a process how the board starts the process and how does it link up also with an accountable and appointed executive authority. We further recommend that the government should develop a mandatory framework for effective collaboration among the SOEs. I think that is something that is clear, where we're trying to say we need to move away from the silos. And the fifth recommendation I've already indicated earlier is that a central remuneration authority is required to standardize the way the SOEs are being remunerated. And the other part was that the regulation, that we need to develop some form of framework that can enable that the regulation is dealt with without also the contradiction of being a referee and a player as government, but to have structures that deal with the regulation and also to minimize the situations of of what is called the competitive environment for all the players, whether they're private or they are state. Coming to performance, this was a critical, in particular when it relates to the commercial entities. We believe that they need to be subjected to what you call a strong performance system. And further, that there should be a strategic review every 5 years, which we've already indicated, and subjected to the parliamentary oversight process. And the other part is that the clarity on what then is their intent and what is their performance requirement in terms of the strategy and the programs. We found that some had plans, others didn't have. So those are the details of our recommendations. And then the other issues, they related to actually their roles in terms of transformation. A number of things that we identified that they should actually take a very clear transformative role. And from recommendation 11 to 16, we outlined each one of those areas, which are very much a key. Number one being skills and skills development. The irony of our country is that we produced some of the best artisans that have actually even left this country. And they were products of the SOEs. And they're the people that they feed us into the economy. But we then close those facilities. And so the SOEs, the balance shifted towards trying to make them completely commercial. And at the same time, we have suffered as an economy because today you keep hearing, we don't have this skill, we don't have that skill. Yet the SOEs have and had that infrastructure. The procurement issues are very much important and critical in our country and how we actually, what you call, redistribute the wealth of the country, and the SOEs can play the role also in helping with the enterprise development and the social justice. We've also noticed that the socio-economic development role of the SOEs that they have played, some of them are solidly for that purpose, others that are non-commercial can play that role. So we then deal with all those transformation matters in that recommendation. And the recommendation is that the government rationalizes holding by focusing on those SOEs that provide public goods and those that are deemed to be strategic. And we make a reasonable attempt to say, what do we define by strategic? But there are certain things, whether it is, you know, the security of supply, or it is services, that it's a monopoly good, or it is, you know, we have a detailed list in the report of what do we mean by that, and we're saying, you know, those ones, that's where we need to focus, because we are arguing, we need to rationalize the 715. We don't need them. Some of them we then put a process that some of them you will move them into what you call back into the line function department. And the others that whose mandate has expired and they are not viable, you also make that you will actually diversify from them. But those that then we retain, they should then be given a very strong what you call resourcing. And that's why we talk about the funding, that the funding model needs to be reviewed. Again, with the funding, what we found is that the funding is mainly what you call done on the basis of debt finance. And we say we have a world-class equity finance system, the Joint Stock Exchange. And there's nothing that precludes the country to limit its exposure to the debt by holding on to 100% ownership. If you want and controlling interest in any business, 50 plus 1 is sufficient. So we are recommending that. Let's look at other attitudes, smarter ways to do the job, to do the same thing while we minimize the pressure on our officers. And if we look at our trading partners, most of our trading partners sitting in BRICS, you go to the Norwegians, you look at the French, you look at the Brazilians, you look at Singapore, they've done this. They've used the same model. and I mean Singapore Airlines is among the best run in the world, and it is a state-owned entity. South Africa, Dimension Data. Dimension Data is owned by a Japanese state-owned enterprise. So there's nothing that says performance and good performance is the monopoly of private sector. What is important is what is your calibration and what are your national interests and what's the best way to proceed. So that we are recommending this particular shift, and then we also say the partnering with what you call the private sector should actually be, we should not be ambivalent about it. It needs to say, if you're saying you want to be partnering with private sector, it should be clear so that it can open up the opportunity of investment and reducing of the state dependence on the debt finance. We're also recommending we need to make a distinction between what is public, what you call economic infrastructure and social infrastructure, and find different ways of funding and financing this. Otherwise, it becomes a risk-aggressive what you call taxation policy if we don't do that. We also are aware it is a very difficult area, but we should not stop, simply because we say, and take a simplistic way and let it become risk-aggressive. We also dealt with the issue of that, you know, there are certain sectors, for example, our mining sector, that they actually should pay their fair share in terms of the infrastructure. Our view, and based on also assessments in other countries, we found that that sector is not paying its fair share. And so we're recommending that matter be looked into, especially in terms of the infrastructure, whether it is our rails and our roads. You know, that we need to look at that particular principle. We further recommend that the government should turn some of our SOEs into world-class national flagship. The interesting thing is the last report that indicated the top 10 market capitalized companies in the world, 5 of them were Chinese-owned, and they were SOEs. The top 2 were Chinese SOEs. So what is indicating here is that, yes, we do have that possibility. Singapore has demonstrated it. Malaysian colleagues that came here, they shared with us what they've done. The Brazilians have done the same thing. The Norwegians have done that. The French have done a similar thing. It's not everything. And remember, when we talk about commercial, we are only relating to 21, 22 SOEs. And if we begin to amalgamate them, they can actually be even fewer. And for me, if you look at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, I mean, some of our conglomerates, they owned more than the number of assets we're talking about. One company, if you take Anglo, you know, you will see that in terms of take business. So what the principle is for us was not the problem. It was just, do we see that as a way for us to optimize and to take it a much more stronger role in the region, geopolitically, as well in our domestic situation with the SOEs. The government should address the issue of non-financial viability. That's why we're saying the rationalization and all those things. What do you do with the SOEs? In a much more detailed way. First, people say the report is not addressing certain issues, but we break that down instead of taking sensational terminologies. We're just saying these are the steps that are best for the decision makers, that is Parliament and the executive authority. And then we deal with the issue of the capacity. That is broadly, that those are the critical areas that the state needs to look into. In the ability to set strategy and building the what you call the human capacity, putting the financial system and ensure that the state also runs them, you know, effectively and efficiently. And we believe that there should be a common national understanding and commitment to that development of state. And then we need to build the capacity and implement that overarching strategy, which then informs everybody about what role the SOEs must do. And then earlier on, we talked about the reforms, and we need to have the interministerial committee and the technical support to drive the process. And this is more about the Council of Ministers. The government should ensure that the executive authority, they carry out those strategic management and they run those institutions professionally. I think that's before itself. And then the issue of putting the decision-making capacity in all the departments that are responsible for the SOEs. And finally, we're saying the government should develop an integrated reporting and monitoring system and evaluation of the SOEs. At the moment, we find there was too much fragmentation. In fact, when we were asking how many SOEs do we have in the country, the Treasury said probably 300 and something, and we ended up with 700. Nobody knows. Yeah. So what we're saying, we need a system. In the olden days, no Numzane would have cattle without knowing how many are they. Even if they didn't go to school, they put a small stone on the side. As cows are coming out, they told in that. When they come back in the afternoon, as the cow comes in, they throw the stone. They'll tell you whether I'm running short or not. Now, how can we sit as a country not knowing what we own, what we have, and what we've invested in? But fortunately, the PRC has started that particular work. It has put together now a national database. It's sitting with the HHRC, and that report also has got the analysis and everything. It's a question of taking it forward. And then we've then put in the recommendations. Just to round up, Mr. Chair, one can say overall the report comprises of 5 sections. With you have firstly, I think, the executive summary, and the second one is the detailed report, and then we also have a disk that carries all the primary information and data. That includes surveys that we commissioned, primary research, and for each term of reference, the average of about 2 or 3 discussion based on the topic, and then we also had public hearings. And we also had submissions, because we were aware that in our country there are those that we were not going to use a submission-based process. We also wanted oral presentations. So we've got those recordings. So the 5 volumes of this report are available, and you can trace from where it came from to the conclusion that the PRC reached. I hope I did stick to closer to the time, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank yourself and the honourable members for taking the time to listen to the report. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Members are invited to Honourable Fulgo, Clare of Mugwena, Honourable Norman, Tasha, Michael, I'll allow the department of the GDC if there's anything you want to raise your book.
Thank you very much. My name is Honorable Khululu. I must first thank the PRC for the presentation that they put before us here. I've got a million of questions, but I'll ask only 2 questions. And the first one, actually, it's on the 715 SOEs. I just wanted to check if all these 715 SOEs LOCs are getting their budget from national officers, and are there any other ones that are self-sustainable among the 715, and how are they performing generally? The second one would be on the appointment of boards. I realize that in your recommendations, actually, you put in Parliament first, to say that the Parliament has to play its role And now I was checking on the appointment of the board members. Are you saying that Parliament should also be involved, for instance, in the appointment of these board members for these SOCs? Because I've visited some time ago Chile, where I saw a lot of board members in state-owned companies. Some of the board members are members of Parliament. For the fact that you are a legislator in that portfolio, you're in a better position, actually, to be in the board of one of the companies that are owned by the state. Are you saying that maybe we might see members of Parliament also being appointed in this board in the future? I think let me stop there for now. I'll ask the other question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jameson, for the presentation. I think this is a good news story. When you came to this committee in February 2011, at any point, you and the DEF were just outlining the mandate of the Presidential Review Committee. And now it's 2.5 years later, and here you have a detailed report. I think we can stand proud, and I think we should congratulate the leadership of this committee to produce this report. I think we can stand proud. It is a good report. It's solid. As you said, and I checked my notes at that time, it's not a micro review. It was a macroeconomic review. And it was never supposed to go into the detail by naming state-owned companies. But I think it's a good overall report, and I think we need to congratulate you. I have two questions. So one is, your report puts a tremendous responsibility on the role of the state in implementing this. And more specifically, you say that there must be established a state-owned enterprise inter-ministerial committee. Now that Minister of Council, Council of Ministers, or the inter-ministerial committee, it seems to be a good point, but at the end the question is, who will be the champion? Who is the champion that will drive it? When I was involved in other white papers to be produced in a specific department, that department was the champion, and that minister in that department wrote that white paper until it was accepted in Parliament. So my question is, who will be the champion in implementing this report? My second question, one of the recommendations you make, I think it's recommendation 30, says that government should improve financial decision-making capacity in all departments dealing with the state-owned companies. My question is then, how is this done practically, especially with regard to adherence to the Public Finance Management Act? PFMA is a guideline for all government departments, all state-owned companies. There's a schedule of state-owned companies, and I see you've listed here on page 57. Schedule and what schedule of the PFMA they are. Schedule 2, for instance, of the 4,715, 243 are Schedule 2 entities. So my question is, how do we make sure they adhere to the PFMA? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Complementary remarks I made here. This is a very laudable work that has been executed by this government since it came into power, the ANC-led government, by the way, since 1994. It's a very positive instrument of transformation. It's not very easy to transform the economy of the country, let alone government. Even in regard to the history that we actually have. So I'm very, very proud of this demonstration of delivery. It's not just, when I look at this report, it's not just
slip away. But you can see the spirit of intention of transforming this country. So well done, Percy. As Honorable Governor has just said now here, that we first received a preliminary presentation at Shelly Point when we had a workshop. And the then chairperson, who is now the National Commissioner of Police, did an excellent job in preserving. We just bowled over. And she actually admitted that we were just appointed without terms of reference. So you had to contrive, innovate terms of reference. The president did a very wonderful thing, Honorable Zuma, to which I put this in here. Having said so, I will see each person that this DRC is work in progress. At that time, you know, we're given only 18 months. Now I've taken 27 months. It was clear to us at that time, the parliamentarians, that she would not finish this work within 8 months. I want to have a presupposition here that this is just like King 1, 2, 3. This could be PRC 1, and then you have to be reconvened for PRC 2, PRC 3, until the whole thing is covered, because the work is just too imponderable. We cannot sit here and say, what's been done, and engage in self-congratulation, say, an interministerial committee is set up, It is only the tip of an iceberg. Only now is the work now beginning. That's point one. Point two, the legal framework that you require is going to be a behemoth. It's a huge, huge, huge task, because you see, you have uncovered 715. Entities, SOCs, utilities, etc., etc., and say that the HSRC is still busy ferreting out more. The lady sitting next to me here, Honorable Woman, will tell you the frustration they have in human settlements and land affairs. They just had a workshop. The database, we don't know how much land the country actually owns, apart from entities, the actual physical piece of rock. That's how big the problem is. Precisely because of the manner in which the previous regime has been operating, secrecy and darkness, etc., etc. Now, we're trying to be transparent. Even transparent, you know, it will take generations for everything to come up here. Now, linked to the chairperson is this whole question of developmentalism. I don't think we should be implacably wedded to the fact that we must keep everything we have. And I'm not suggesting privatization. I'm the last person to suggest that. Coming from the party that is addressed to representation. But you see, it was still like a Ventura. And many other things that we just have to get rid of. We can't just behave like this traditionalistic family, which has got an outside planet, and on top of it, we've got this pram that belongs to a great granny. And then the overlooks, father said, don't touch that pram! It's rusted, it's dilapidated, it's sitting on the toilet. Now, some of these, I mean, it just have to be real. There's no point just having pride in saying this is a great pram there. And just sitting there, and then, in the meantime, taking all the money from the fiscals. Also, with this new generation, bond free and whatnot, they're going to pay tax. You know, they're going to and MBO. They say, no, we're not going to carry on paying for the last of the great pram on the outside toilet. So we have to get rid of them. Clearly, that's not privatization. Finally, Chairperson, this question of ownership is very deep. It's not a question of 51%. Some of these SOCs, when you gave me 1994, some of us have been to be here for 4 terms. Some MPs at that time of the National Sport came up boldly to say, oh, this is based on the president. Oh, no, I'm a show in South Korea. I'm a show in South America, etc. And I can mention some of the names. And so you do have, it's like a reserve bank. Before we came here, we thought the reserve bank was owned by the government. But now we know there are so many private divisions there. So it's not a question of just 51% being owned by government. The law says, the company says, if you hold 26% of the shares, you have a controlling voice in terms of what could happen financially in terms of economic things. So, and could have that one person who's sitting in the aircraft call, 23%, and they say, oh, I think this PSL report. They will not budge an inch without me, you see. So we'll have to do a thorough audit to actually know what's the threshold of shareholding. If it is less than 6%, we know we're safe, we can do what they want to do to expand. Yes.
Thank you very much, Deposan. I also would just like to say how pleased I am, and we as a committee, I know, are pleased about this report. We've waited a long time for it. I don't like the idea that we kind of were floating around without the report, and yet we had to still move forward. And I remember right at the beginning in 2011, we raised the very thing that, you know, we've still got to go ahead, but yet we don't know what's going to come out. So thank you very much, and I think that it's very detailed. I haven't had a chance to go into the whole report, but I shall certainly be doing so. I think for me, the crux of the matter is in the implementation. We get accused all the time of not being able to implement, but you have set out a framework there, and we now have the beginnings, really, of quite a number of structures all moving in a direction, and I think that is good, and all in the National Development Plan. But I think right at the crux of this thing for me, and it has been raised, is the who is going to drive it. I would hazard a guess that this committee is also going to have to play an extremely important role in doing just what I'm asking here, you know, how we drive this thing. So I would ask you, in view of the fact that all these different, and I serve on the Human Settlements Committee, and right in the beginning, we've had a whole turnaround strategy, and as you all know, it's a similar sort of thing. There's so many departments that have had to be drawn in, you know, in order to develop human settlements. So, and I'm saying, who is going to actually drive this thing so that we do get a result? I'm a person who likes a result tomorrow. And I can see from this that we've got different stages and that some things are going to take longer. But I think our oversight is going to be to make sure that the 2 years, the 5 years, you know, that happens, and we need that program. But it still needs someone who's going to sit down and drive it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, the Democratic Alliance obviously welcomes the development of a framework to clarify specifically the roles of ministers, boards, and CEOs. I think that was terribly important. We also welcomed the comments made that struggling state-owned enterprises must be merged into light function departments, or into public-private partnerships, or completely disposed of if that was required. We welcomed that kind of very clear outlook and very honest outlook on the way things are going. But, Chair, there were some things that were not too clear. Chair, one thing we'd like to know is, and when would we know this, what SEOs are being considered for rationalisation? Because a lot was said about rationalising SEOs are just, you know, financially non-viable. When would we know what those SOEs are? Chair, also, what state entities are going to be moved into what is being called this ministerial empire? The report recommends commercial state-owned entities go under one ministry, but nothing has been said as to what those specific state-owned entities are. Chair, the DA is certainly of the belief that to achieve economic growth and to create jobs, state-owned entities must be prioritized to operate with complete autonomy from government. So it's very important for us to know exactly what would fall under this ministerial empire. Because we believe that this ministerial empire will produce exactly the opposite of what we're striving to achieve. Chair, I'd also recommend that now that we have this presidential review and it is so detailed and it is so very complex, that perhaps we look at creating a subcommittee to consider the report and to engage with its findings, because it has a massive, massive impact on the way going forward on the National Development Plan, and the way we interact as our economy as a whole going forward. Chairman, I heard something earlier, and perhaps I misunderstood. I heard something about members of Parliament being included onto boards. Chair, Member of Parliament certainly are here to conduct oversight and not to interfere with the functioning of boards. So perhaps if I could just have a bit of clarity as to where that came from, because that made my blood run cold.
Thank you, Chair. And once more again, we'd like to express our gratitude to all the honourable members for their congratulatory notes to this exercise. Indeed, it was a difficult task and to be undertaken, but we took it with the utmost sensitivity and responsibility, not only just to today, but to the future of our country. We did note that never in the history of our country had there been a presidential initiative that was carte blanche, to say, tell us what you think. And the selected team members being independent specialists without any particular parameters. In fact, our brief from the state president was amazing when he said, there is no sacred cow. We came into office, we inherited these institutions, we started running with them, and we are still running with them. And so many of us are encumbered with now vested interests. Can you shed some light for us to make better informed decisions? And this is really the premise of the report. And where we're coming from is that we've also avoided emotional, emotive, and terminology so that we can have a report of national unity and a report of national cohesion, a report that can resonate with our medium to long-term national interests, because we as a country have invested so much in these institutions. And so we did take a position, but further we were also cognizant that our client at that point in time, being the state president, is not coming from the vacuum. They do have their own point of departure, politically and ideologically. And, I mean, as consultants, you work with what your client outlook is. And in this particular case, we were guided primarily by the policy documents of the African National Congress. We went back to the Constitution, and we went back into the RTP. We went back into what you call the Polokwane resolutions, and that then became our point of departure. And certainly, had we received a brief from the IFP, we would have done the same thing, or the DA, whichever party was it. It was a brief specifically aligned to the policies and the outlook predominantly of our client. However, we did take a very conscious, innovative and independent point of view in terms of when they said there are no sacred cows. So you would see that there's a plethora and a mixture of different policy recommendations that we make, primarily based on a mixed economy. Now, these areas have elements of subjectivity, depending of your point of departure, whether it's political or even, you know, special interest. So if we go back into some of the questions that we were asked, I would like to draw the honorable members to the recommendation 23, but 24 deals with the question of what do you do with the SOEs that were not financially or commercially viable. We have dealt with the ones that we say they are commercially viable. In the ones that they said they're commercially viable, we said you need to have a criteria whether you retain them or not. Among those things is that what is your national interest? We also said what are your national security issues? If you're dealing with the security of supply, what are the, what you call, monopoly dynamics? And can you, can you afford to diversify from a monopoly situation, and what's been the experience elsewhere in the world? That's when we found the best practices. That some of, and we had a mixture of developed nations and developing countries that have got diversified ideologies. The Norwegian, for example, they said, this is where our national sovereignty stays. We own those particular assets as a state, and we own them up to this particular extent. Some of them, it's 100%. Some of them, we bring in private sector. Those are the decisions that now, as political leaders, you need to take into consideration. But what we shared with you is that this is what you find. It's not a situation that we can prescribe. But we were informed when we, when we looked by those particular best practices. We found some of the best performing state-owned entities, performing companies in the world with state-owned entities. Take, for example, as I said earlier on, the Singapore Tamasek. They run the best transport, SOEs, by any world standard, and yet they are state-owned. So those are the issues. I say, what scientifically, what are the facts? We know we can see ideology and all those things, but we were not to be drawn in that direction. We were to be drawn first and foremost by the scientific approach to these particular questions. And then we said there are those that are not performing. And when we're dealing with that, I'd like to draw the members to page 47 of the report, the volume 2. The page 47 of the report deals with what we call the taxonomy of the SOEs, which outlines properly the categorization. You find there that we have, for example, the parliamentary oversight entities. Those entities will and shall always be state-funded. The question of which ones are funded by Treasury. You're talking your Chapter 9 institutions, the IBCs of this world. And we found that there was a report, the Kadasma report, and our position is that we are recommending that report be implemented. It's been done. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. So you can't deal with those state-owned entities as you deal, for example, we've identified they are commercial government entities, they are non-commercial government entities. So you can, for example, if you look at the public entities that are sitting there, for example, that are doing the service delivery, your water boards, your preppers of this world, you only need to provide a certain level of state subsidy. But if you go to commercials across, you then have a different kettle of fish. And you need to look at that, how then do you capitalize them? So what we're saying is that we need to move just one step lower in terms of drill down and make a distinction so that we don't treat them as homogeneous. And then you can reach the conclusion based on the criteria that we've put there that, for example, in number recommendation number 24, that you must consider that the state can diversify because the technology has moved. There's no need for the state to be there. Okay? You need to look at the funding, whether you can still afford to fund those things. So, yes, we do agree with the Honorable Member, Ms. Mkwena, that frame up there may need to be taken down finally. But there must be a reason why we are taking it down. And there must be a process that is much more structured, much more well considered, instead of willy-nilly. Because the cases, we also look at the cases. we don't have a very good history of privatization. The cases where we privatized, when it came to capitalizing, the private sector ran away. Take what happened at AXA when we needed the infrastructure for the airport. The airport company pulled back. That's their international partner. So you have those situations. Look at Telkom. Telkom what sold its interest in Vodacom for about 17 billion. And in the last 3, 4, 5 years, the same assets have paid dividends to the tune of 15. So what are we doing? We privatize profit-making capability of the state. We nationalize loss-making, and then we say the state is not performing. We need to know what exactly is this that we are doing. The Norwegians told us straight away, we've got assets, we've got oil. We've got these airports, they run at a loss. But these ones cross-subsidize the other way. On the balance of all, this is what this thing does. We can reach every corner of our country under emergency at the same cost. So we have those kind of challenges that we need probably a little bit more engagement to come to the conclusion as to what and how best then we can advance those questions. Further, honorable members, we definitely the issue of the appointment of the board, as honorable Michaels was pointing out, no, our recommendation is not recommending that. What we are saying, the oversight remains oversight rules, and the operations remains with the board. The accountable officer, which is the executive authority, and the board need a mechanism of that they come into decision collectively, but allowing the board to start the process and then recommend. So, no, we are not recommending because it would contradict where you become a referee and possibly also a player. It's not the bad practice. But yes, some countries, they do that. But it is more on ex officio basis with something happens of that nature. It's not with the same powers as the other board members. The issue that also dealt with the role of the champion, the interministerial committee, according to the president, is that there will be a lead manager to champion that responsibility. However, because these SOEs are sitting in different ministries, they needed a team to look into this process. But the recommendation on having the two central executive authorities, it is not necessarily about building, with all due respect, honorable member, that it would be an empire. It is just to say we need to build centers of excellence, especially around such a sensitive area of our commercial entities. And that center of excellence to provide the leadership instead of having our state institution fragmented as they are at the moment. And this is the practice that we saw. And it's also saying they're still retaining the boards. So it's not that you're taking the boards and dismantling the boards and having one holding company like Thomas said. It is just saying that there's one leadership that is accountable for those key. And one pointed out, we are talking commercial ones. And there's only about 2021. If you look at them, you can merge those things probably 4 or 5 entities around the areas for their concentration. But as we said, we're not prescribing at this stage. But the details that we template, we indicate, point out that you could. And that's why I was making the example that Bidvest probably carries more than what we are recommending under that. And then you have the development finance ones. Again, their policies, we find they begin to compete with each other, they're cannibalizing. We need just to give them some kind of formal central relationship. We are leaving the rest, that with the line function ministers. We're saying, let them stay the line function minister. But a good example, what we found, for example, policies administratively, take the DPE. DPE has developed some of the best practices of terms of policies. But they have no authority over what the Minister of Transport does with its SOEs. So there is in that central sense a center of excellence to give, you know, in military terms, some form of central command, but not necessarily that it is an executive. You still have the board being retained as they are to drive the entities. So that is a slight distinguishing thing to a situation whereby we're saying bring everything, one holding company, one holding minister, one chairman of the board. So it's different. It's different. And we saw that practice. The French are using that model. And the Chinese are using partly that model as well. And so that's where we were picking up some of those best practices. And we are also of the view that it's not that the regulatory framework is not being adhered to, but we went further today. There's just too many legislations, so it may not be able to actually adhere to these things. We say let's look at one legislation that can enable the administration, including what will be sitting with the DFMA. You've got King Report. You also have a Companies Act. So yes, Honourable Member Mkwena, yes, I think in a sense it is a journey from what we could see that can be taking a country forward. I'll just allow my colleague to add some of the areas that he...
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, my honourable members. I think Ms. Mashinga covered most of the questions. I will pick up a few that might have not received some emphasis. I think there was a question around the financial, how to practically improve the financial capacity within departments. I think the key recommendation around creating the central authority, center of excellence, is to precisely deal with that particular issue. So how do you empower the departments who have the oversight role over SOEs? There are a number of approaches that can be looked at by the central authority, including the one that is used by the Malaysians, for example, where they produce handbooks for each and every aspect of the shareholding management role on various issues around governance, financing of SOE funding and all that. And also training approaches that are used. There are best practices that are there. Internationally, we can even tap into the expertise that are sitting in various organizations around the world. Those details are sitting in our discussion papers, which are annexed into this report. And also, the one emphasis I want to add and to make is around the issue of what SOEs are being considered. That's a very simple issue, as Mr. Mishinin has highlighted. What this report has done is to outline a framework to do that, into that. And that power will still sit with Parliament to make a determination. The process of making white paper is well known and well established. So that will mean the IMC, the interministerial, as well as the secretariat will process those issues through Parliament and other relevant processes. So it's very important. So what this says is that this is indeed a phased-in process. As we're saying in the implementation chapter, you have different phases, short, medium to long term. So there are certain things that are easy to do in our point of view, in the committee's point of view, that can be implemented immediately. And then there are medium to long term that can be implemented. What this report now seeks to do is to cushion any aspect of new new development in the SOE environment within the proper legal framework, also within the context of the national development plan. Since we now have, within that context, we are able to justify any decision that you're making in a proper legal framework. So the recommendations are very much clear on that. We need to have a proper legal framework to introduce these changes that are very critical for SOEs to be much more effective and relevant into our economy. And a number of aspects were considered. It's not an easy thing to say you rationalize this SOE in that way. Because we have, as Mr. Martinez said, we have experience as a country in testing various approaches to these things, where you try to privatize, you try to rationalize, and all that. But what is important here is that there should be a proper framework that enables you to take well-informed decisions. So that's what the white paper process will seek to do. And fortunately, the National Development Plan is that these things will be aligned together. And as Mr. Martinez has highlighted, the honorable member has also highlighted the fact that it's a huge task that requires a dedicated team to develop this technical aspect of the work. And that's why we propose the secretariat that will support the interministerial committee. And there's a lot of consultation that goes with this issue. But we do have the experience that sits in different departments that can be put together under this mechanism that has been proposed here.
Available if members or the committee would like further discussion around this part. So I think this is just, let's just take this effort. Any interaction on the report itself, and if somewhere down the line we feel that we still need some further. Mr. Mashinin is in fact even prepared to conduct a workshop with members on this. So we just get the money and go to Shelly Point and have a more relaxed and laid back interaction. But this really, let me thank Mr. Mashinin, Dr. Becker. Thank you so much for, like I say, and I think you've noticed the response of members generally, that this is something that we can all be proud of, and hopefully it will take us some, but I think what the members also like to see or can't wait to see happen is the implementation of the report itself. I think with time we'll see the implementation of this report. But thank you so much. A job well done. And for this presentation, I'd like to thank all members for their valuable input in this presentation. DG, thank you, and the staff members. And thank everybody who is here. This really brings us to the end of this interaction, and the meeting is adjourned.